Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. Our guest for this segment is Dr. Michael Auslan, a highly regarded scholar and professor and expert on a very important part of the world, Asia. He is a contributor through his role as a resident scholar and director of Japan Studies at the American Enterprise Institute, a biweekly columnist for the Wall Street Journal, an author in a prodigious way of both periodical literature and, of course, several important books.
Hello, Frank. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about your thoughts, particularly, Michael, about the very serious danger, it seems to me, that is emerging at the moment in this Western Pacific, East Asia region of conflict, perhaps with the Chinese and us, perhaps with the Chinese and others, who knows, the North Koreans. Give us your read on the prospects as you see them.
Well, I think, first of all, this is an easy region to overlook. I mean, we've got major problems in the Middle East, obviously, that are only growing. We have continued problems in Europe with Russia. We've got to focus on the U.S. election here. And so the fact that Asia is not erupting into conflict today is something that allows people to sort of kick it to the side and say, well, you know, we'll deal with it later. The problem is that it's not static. And as we've seen over the past several years, China has militarized the South China Sea. It has built new islands in those seas. It has essentially declared that it is going to begin enforcing its claims, and that's down in the south. It is challenging Japan in the East China Sea. And as you mentioned, North Korea continuing to do what North Korea does best, which is keep everyone on edge in the north. We are really at a point where Asia could flare into conflict, and we will be caught by surprise, not because we haven't known that there are problems, but because we're not paying attention to them. And I think the danger is growing.
Not paying attention to them is, of course, just one piece of it. I think this indictment would also go further to say we're not preparing for it, as in fact we should. Let me ask you about a thesis that he has advanced, and I suspect it's part of your analysis as well, Michael, and that is that China is really facing a kind of demographic time bomb with its one-child policy. And these are my words, not his, but I think it captures the thought that China's got to get while the getting's good. And that's why we're seeing it behaving so aggressively in the South China Sea before it suddenly confronts the reality that its population is going to contract and thereby reduce its ability to have its way elsewhere in the region. Do you read it that way as well?
I certainly think that's part of the problems that China faces. I think what we have not gotten our heads around, and it's certainly something that I try to talk about extensively in the book that you mentioned, The End of the Asian Century, is that China faces a raft of problems. And our narrative, our sort of cultural mindset on China has been one of fear and opportunism at the same time, thinking it was just going to grow forever and we could turn it into some sort of natural political partner of ours as well as the world's largest economy. And the reality is the future for China is rather bleak. It is going to face a huge number of economic, political, demographic, as you mentioned, social problems. And part of it is that the disastrous one-child policy for 30 years, which has just been overturned, is going to send it into a demographic decline, which is going to put social stress, which is going to cause political stress, and exacerbate the economic weakness that people are just beginning to take acknowledgement of.
Yeah. And as you look at this, the economic piece of it particularly, you talk about stagnation. There has been a remarkable phenomenon. I think it used to be said when the United States sneezes, the world catches cold. It seems as though at the moment when China has stagnation, the rest of the world is catching a kind of economic pneumonia. Is that overstating it? And if not, what are the repercussions of that kind of stagnation, Michael Auslan?
No. This is a huge issue, Frank. And, you know, it sort of gets into specifics that a lot of people don't pay attention to. But first, what finally woke people up was when the Chinese stock market cratered last year, which sent global stock markets and global equities sharply down. And then it happened again at the beginning of this year. The bloom has come off the rose of this idea that, you know, China is a sort of Marco Polo land of eternal growth. And so the instability and uncertainty that is coming from the weakness in the economy reflected in China's stock market, the multi-hundred billion dollar capital outflow that the Communist Party is trying to staunch, the outflow from China, which is further weakening prospects for growth in the country, is also combined with the fact that its slowdown, which has been going on now for several years, and which the Chinese leadership is telling us is no mere blip, but is the new normal, has depressed economic growth throughout Asia, as well as even farther abroad in the world, but particularly in Asia, the economies of Japan, South Korea, Australia, so developed and less developed economies as well, have been hurt by the Chinese contagion. Now, you know, you talk to folks who invest and who trade, and they're still working on the old model of China, and they're so invested in it that it's very hard for them to acknowledge this new reality. And what they'll say is, well, you know what, if China's growing at 5%, that's better than anywhere else. But of course, what we're talking about is probably stagnation that's happening right now, and a drop, a significant drop from 10% growth and more to barely limping along. So the big story in the next decade will be the end of the China dream and how the world is going to react to a China that's come down to earth. In some ways, that's good. In some ways, it'll actually cause more problems.
Yeah. Michael Oslin, are you concerned that the Chinese are cooking the books on the numbers and that they may, in some respects, be even worse than what we're being told at the moment?
Oh, I think most serious analysts and economists, and here you need to do a little bit of old-fashioned Kremlinology, you know, you have to combine politics and economics, are pretty much convinced of that proposition and it's more complex, I think, in a way. I'm not sure that Beijing, and I don't think anyone's really sure that Beijing is blatantly cooking the books. It's that the whole system is corrupt. And so no one really knows what the true growth level is or true growth rates. You had just a few weeks ago, I think about a month or two ago, the central government sanction and actually punish the Central Statistics Bureau, which is one of its own bureaus, for rampant misrepresentation of statistics. Now, were they doing it on their own, or were they getting bad statistics from the interior? And the answer is probably yes to all of those. So the reality is that no one, I think even the Chinese, understand exactly what's going on with the economy. You have to disaggregate it by sector, disaggregate it by region. The Northeast clearly seems to be in a stagnant, if not recessionary, phase. There's still some growth along the coast, but here's the real issue, I think, for us. We have become fairly good and certainly put a lot of time over the past quarter century into developing tools to understand what a growing and stronger China looks like. We now have to develop a different set of tools to understand what a weakening and less powerful China looks like.
I couldn't have said it better. And let me just ask you one last question before we let you go that, of course, is interconnected in so many ways with what we've just been discussing, and that is the prospect that the Japanese and or the South Koreans may be looking at this evolving situation and the risks associated with it and saying, you know, we better get ourselves a nuclear deterrent of our own, especially since we can't have confidence in that of the United States any longer. Your quick thoughts on that, Michael Oslin?
It's a third rail for Japan. There are obviously some strategists who think about it in general. I don't think the country is anywhere near that yet. It would be a huge failure of American policy if they got to that point. I think we should really keep our eyes on South Korea. The South Koreans have made it very clear how disappointed they are and frustrated they are with our unwillingness to do anything about North Korea, which is becoming a full-fledged nuclear power, and it is now an open topic of debate. Now, if they do go nuclear, then it will be added pressure on Japan to talk about the possibility of this. So I think that our inaction, our lack of a strategy, may actually force some of our allies to take the unthinkable step of becoming nuclear powers, and that would have a reverberation effect throughout the region.
Michael, I hope you'll come back to us again soon, and the rest of you will do the same tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.